Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batson. The sinking of the Titanic, April 15 and 16, 1912. All these decades later, there's still a fascination with why did it sink? Why did it sink quickly or slowly? Charles Pellegrino and Anthony Alcuri are going to help me understand some of the speculation over the years. Charlie, the starboard penetration of below the waterline. The Titanic was called unsinkable. It was my first deep understanding of irony as a child when I saw a Titanic movie. It kept emphasizing the word, it's unsinkable, it's unsinkable. And then there's a dramatic moment which was Hollywood invented, I imagine, in the bridge when they were complaining, but it's unsinkable. No, it's not. There were 16 watertight compartments from stem to stern. How many were penetrated and what could it have survived?
Yeah, well, actually, the discussion in the two of the films, A Night to Remember and Titanic, the more recent Titanic film, those conversations on the bridge actually did take place. And she could have floated with four of the forward compartments completely gone. Even if you snapped off the entire bow section up to the bridge where that conversation was taking place, still she would have floated and been kept up by those other compartments. It was just you lost the first four compartments. You had flooding in the fifth compartment was just almost enough. And then back in boiler room four, further back, you had water seeping up through the floors, and it was just the last few feet of damage by just a series of punctures and splits by the pounding of the ice that last few feet did it. And then in addition to that, as she began to go down by the bow, there were a lot of open portholes. We did a census in 2005 and afterward after that expedition, and it seems about 18% of the portholes in near the front of the ship were open because of overheating of the rooms. They didn't even have fans in the rooms. Those came in later ships, so people kept the portholes open at night. Even though it was 28 degrees outside, it was better to have cold air blowing into the room than the heating people were experiencing, and they looked out, they saw, well, what did we hit? And many people went out and wandered around and explored the ship and then headed for the lifeboats, leaving those portholes still open. And, for example, in just one of the rooms owned by the publisher, Harper, his open portholes, which we could still see when we got robots inside and they were still cranked open, and that alone, considering that the damage was only about 12 square feet total, about two sidewalk squares, that alone added 50% to the flooding that was caused by the iceberg. So as she went down, that flooding became two times more, three, and it just went up logarithmically.
Did the bridge know the portals were open?
There are indications, eyewitness accounts, that one of the ship's designers, Thomas Andrews, he was trying to get doors open in rooms. No one could find keys. They couldn't get doors open after a while. They were banging doors down and throwing them over for someone to maybe float on them. They were trying to get into rooms, apparently, to close some of those portholes. And then, meanwhile, you had one officer who ordered a gangway door open on D-deck, right near a stairwell, that apparently that door was open as the water reached it. Of course, they could never get that door closed from the water pressure coming in around the height of their knees, and the water started going right down that stairwell, flooding the next deck below, which had a place called Scotland Road, which was a big companionway that went from the front all the way back toward the engine rooms. That quickened the rate of the sinking. And it's amazing that after all of that, she still floated 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Scotland Road was third class passengers. That was E-deck. So the flooding reached E-deck that quickly. Anthony, I have read speculation that if Captain Smith had kept moving nominally, it would have slowed the sinking and it would have been permitted him to guide towards the California that they could see in the ice field. Is speculation over a century. I don't know when I read it. It might have been the inquiry right afterwards in New York. Is there any evidence that the moving of the ship would have slowed the sinking with six compartments penetrated?
Well, it'll always exist within the realm of theory, but I don't suspect that it would have slowed the sinking. I would have concerns and reservations about it actually accelerating the sinking. Largely because when a ship's hull is penetrated, the deeper the damage in the water column, the greater the force of the flooding, and that's because of a concept called the pressure head. You know, the flooding will increase almost exponentially with given depth in the water column. And so, what's really not known about the Titanic is that it didn't completely stop immediately after hitting the iceberg. Captain Smith actually did reignite the engines and attempt to move the ship forward to evaluate its steering and how it was handling to sort of see, how the ship was maneuvering with the damage and whether that damage was compromising its trajectory. And he noticed that in fact, the damage was. As soon as the ship hit the iceberg, there was an immediate list to starboard, whereas during the voyage itself, the Titanic actually was listing more so to port, most likely secondary to the coal that had been preferentially burned from the starboard side to stifle the coal bunker fire that was plaguing the ship ever since it had left Southampton. So he had noticed that immediate list to starboard and the Titanic was not maneuvering correctly. And so most likely he made the correct decision to shut the engines down and remain in place. And I suspect the flooding actually would have accelerated if he had continued to move the ship forward and further exposed the iceberg damage below the waterline to deeper regions within the water column that would have accelerated the flooding.
Charlie, the coal fire often mentioned, you've already mentioned that the heat reached the cabins above. That's why the windows were open. Was it reckless of them to leave Liverpool with the coal of a fire known, or did they not know it at sailing?
They knew before they left that the coal fire was going, and coal fires were not completely uncommon on a ship, but this was, it turned out, after 3 days as they were going out, emptying that coal bunker, and then Thomas Andrews went in and he reported that there had been some damage to one of the systems of plates between the two bunkers, and that there would need to be repairs when they got back to New York. So it was a pretty darned hot coal fire, and they were working feverishly to get all that coal, the unburned coal, and to also get the burning coal, get it out of there, put it in the boilers, burn it, use it up, and just clear them. And all they did was oil that wall between the two bunkers. And, of course, the last big noticeable impact from the iceberg was into one of those empty bunkers. And they closed the door, but that's thinner steel than the actual walls between the watertight compartments. So you had that bunker flooding up, and eventually that thin steel did give way.
And Charlie, the radio, the movies, the Hollywood movies make much of the fact that the California had shut down its radio room. So the SOS going out, which was a new call, was extreme frustration to the radio room on Titanic because they could see the California, but it wouldn't answer. Why was California's radio room shut down?
Right. And Bride and Phillips, through the night, they were both blaming themselves. Because as they were, the radio on the Titanic, the telegraph device, had been broken for part of the voyage, and they managed to get it fixed and up and operating that day. And of course, they had a lot of messages to go out. You know, John in Omaha, John and Martha from Omaha having a great time, wish you were here, to get those sorts of messages out. And so they got a message from a ship that was nearby, the Californian, telling them we are stopped in ice. And the Californian was so close that the radio man on the Titanic had hurt his ears. In fact, on the Californian, he was feeling pain in his ears because the signal from the Titanic was also very sharp and loud and near. And the Titanic told the Californian's Marconi operator, shut up, shut up, we're busy here. And then he shut down for the night. He said, well, that's rude. Shut down and went to sleep, not imagining that the Titanic was going to hit ice only minutes later.
So the Californian shut down because the Titanic complained. Is that the answer?
Yeah, told them to shut up, we're busy here.
Anthony.
Although you can't really fault the Titanic for being frustrated, because the Marconi equipment during the voyage had actually gone down. It actually was dysfunctional and required repair. And traditionally, the Marconi equipment is not to be repaired during a voyage. It should be repaired at the next port. And the Marconi operators on the ship actually took it upon themselves to repair the equipment, which is something they were not entitled to do, but were very much efficient at doing. And the reason that the Titanic had the range that it did in order to reach the what eventually became the rescue ship Carpathia is secondary to them actually having disobeyed the rules and repaired the equipment themselves. And so they restored the Titanic's original range, and they were that evening they were actually working through a backlog of messages that the passengers were sending. And of course these were paying passengers, and this was the Marconi company. It was really designed to make a profit for these frivolous messages that passengers would send. It was really its secondary function was really security at that time. It really wasn't until Titanic sank that it brought the Marconi apparatus to the forefront of ship security and navigation and so forth. And so, the Marconi operators, Harold Bride and Jack Phillips, really, they were working through this backlog of company messages for the passengers to turn, for their company. And because they were so behind, they were working Cape Race and so forth. And they told the Californian, regrettably, to shut up and to stay out of their, that it was jamming their signal and they had other priorities at the time.
Right.
Of course.
And the other thing is, hadn't they disobeyed company protocol and thought on their own, the Titanic would simply have disappeared and been another vanished ship with maybe some castaways on lifeboats.
Yes, it would have never been identified because the range, the Titanic did have the most powerful apparatus on the sea at the time. I mean, its voice was like music over the ocean. It was so powerful, but it was also dysfunctional during that voyage because it had it required repair. Mid voyage, it just gave out, and so those operators really not only didn't follow protocol, but they extended the Titanic's range back to its original signal in doing so. So it was just a domino effect of these remarkable occurrences that are so improbable, but then when juxtaposed with each other, resulted in a remarkable historic tragedy.
Anthony, in your opinion, having read all the details of that night, is there anything Captain Smith could have done to keep the Titanic afloat for a few more hours?
I really don't suspect so. I mean, there's a great deal said about the ship, what could have been done theoretically to keep it afloat longer, but really the Titanic surpassed even the estimate that its own designer, Thomas Andrews, had given it. He suspected the ship would sink in an hour, and the ship lasted 2 hours and 40 minutes. And truthfully, it could have lasted longer if individuals hadn't mismanaged the ship in terms of the portholes, the open gangway door, the heating concerns. There were cabins on board that were overheated, and then there were others that didn't receive heat whatsoever. And so, considering all that was stacked against the Titanic that night, it really outperformed its own design. And in many instances during the sinking, we see evidence that the Titanic actually may have survived longer if these individuals acting individually, independent of the captain, hadn't made certain decisions that were not ideal, such as opening the gangway door on D-deck and exposing the reception room and the grand staircase in Scotland Road to that interior flooding that it may have otherwise avoided for some time.
I'm speaking with Anthony El Khoury and Charles Pellegrino. I'm going to give an unlimited budget to Charlie and Anthony and ask what they want to do next with the study of the Titanic at the bottom of the Atlantic. I'm John Batten.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
As cat parents, Ryder and I know the feeling of being ignored by our cats. I often wonder, does my cat even love me?
Well, there's only one solution to solve that. Sheba.
Feed your cat Sheba and go from feeling ignored to truly adored in 12 days. Guaranteed or your money back.
Sheba has so many incredible products that can satisfy even the pickiest eater.
Like new Sheba Grilled, made in the USA with the finest ingredients from around the world. They are savory strips in a succulent sauce that cats are sure to love. And it's 100% complete and balanced with essential vitamins and nutrients for adult cats like my Bill. Made without artificial flavors or preservatives, no corn, wheat, or soy. To learn more, check out Sheba.com.
Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. Miracle-Gro Organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like Bad Dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.